Welcome to Current Situation, your weekly political pulse. I'm your host, Joshua Gale, alongside South Carolina State House Representative Jordan Pace. Every week, our goal is to help you navigate the complex world of politics through a biblically conservative perspective. Before we jump into today's conversation, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor.
Beginning in 2023 and 2024, I am so proud to announce that Let Us Worship will be going to every single state capital across America. Just like we see Jesus tell the disciples to pray that thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, we believe this is the season to bring the kingdom to the capitals across America. Join with us over the next 2 years as we journey to see the fires of revival burn in every single U.S. capital. This is a monumental and ambitious dream that God has given us, and we cannot do it without you. Now is the time. Let us worship.
In this episode, Jordan and I are discussing the South Carolina Energy Bill, also known as H 5118. Jordan is going to give us a little bit of some history, as always, around this energy bill and energy in the state of South Carolina. Jordan's also going to tell us what's kind of hidden in that bill and expose some things in that bill, tell us what we need to know about that bill, and what he wants us to know and understand as listeners and bring our attention to. And then, as always, how you can hold your state representatives accountable for how they vote on this energy bill. And then we're going to dive into, of course, always what the Bible says and how we apply the Word of God to our life and how it's applicable to this energy bill and what's happening at the state and in regards to politics. So, Jordan, good evening. How are you?
Hey, good evening. I'm a little hoarse, but we'll stagger through as best we can.
Awesome. Episode 15, we are hanging in there. Jordan and I both have, several children, and he's got a child that's several months old, and I've got, obviously, one that's 1 month old now, so I'm right behind you. But we know how important it is to bring your attention to things, and we sacrifice this time once a week to record, do a little bit of pre-production, post-production, everything to get this information out to you. So Jordan, we're so grateful that that you're hanging in there and that you can educate us on what we need to understand. So go ahead and with that, give us a little history on energy in the state of South Carolina.
Sure. And thanks to everybody who's listening and for what you're doing on the back end of these, Joshua, editing, all that good stuff that I'm woefully unskilled to do. So South Carolina's energy production companies were scattered all over the map, literally, in the 19th century, the 1800s, when, kind of famously, the city of Anderson, South Carolina, makes the claim to be the first fully electric city in the state. So mostly it was small, rural, and local power production companies, sometimes associated with like rivers or coal plants or just various different ways. So in the new, during the Franklin Roosevelt era, during the New Deal, a lot of that was centralized. There were 19 of those companies merged into one called SCE&G, South Carolina Electric and Gas. And they were the primary producer of electricity until Duke Energy and until the 1940s, also the New Deal created what's called Santee Cooper, which also known as the Public Service Authority. It's a state-owned company that produces electricity. So if you ever go to Munk's Quarter in South Carolina, that's where their headquarters is. They run the dams on Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, as well as a bunch of other power production facilities. So it started. Spread out and then centralized, and that's where the problems really got going. When everything further centralized, because of government action, it limited, honestly, the growth and free enterprise that was being produced in that time period before that. Not everybody had electricity, and frankly, like my grandparents didn't have electricity in northern Spartanburg County when they were kids in the 1950s. So not everybody, even back then, even with government intervention, had electricity yet. But they were getting there. Fast forward a little bit to about 8-10 years ago, really about 12 years ago, the legislature passed something called the Base Load Review Act. The main thing this did was it allowed SCE&G and Santee Cooper to team up together to build a new nuclear power plant in Fairfield County, right on the lake. And it's called VC Summer, or expanding the VC Summer plant. It was going to be a billions of dollars of investment, and part of that bill allowed them to raise rates as they built the facility. Normally, the standard operating procedure is they build a facility, whether it's a coal plant or a nuclear plant or a natural gas plant, and they have to go back to the Public Service Commission, who's in charge of rate hikes. That's a panel right now of 7 people who are very much like a court. They have lawyers are there. They have to prove, we have to raise rates in order to stay solvent, in order to keep producing power. And so it kind of flipped that on its head and allowed them to charge way ahead of time. And then what happened was the plant fell out, like, and never actually was completed. I think it was Westinghouse that was the main vendor there. Went through a bankruptcy. They didn't close. It was more like a restructuring bankruptcy. Essentially, it failed. And the taxpayers were on the hook because Santee Cooper's owned by the state. And then all the ratepayers of SCE&G were on the hook. And that's why now, if you live in South Carolina, you might have Dominion Energy. Because of all the debt associated with that, Dominion came in and bought SCE&G, basically bailed them out, and now operate in their service area. So all that to catch us up to today. Two Christmases ago in the upstate, it got very, very cold. I was actually in Landrum, staying at my in-law's house, and it was like 6 degrees outside. With the wind chill, it was down to like 0. And our grid is not up for that.
Not here.
And they were actually rolling blackouts throughout the upstate and the Midlands. And Santee Cooper, I talked to them, they were on a knife's edge from having blackouts even down here with the temperatures in the teens. So from that, they said, we have to get more production, more base load. And that was one of the big instigators of this bill. The Speaker of the House, this was like his prime prize bill this year that he was going to get through no matter what. It wound up being about 75 pages long. It grew by 15 or 16 pages in committee from where it started. It was a big honker of a bill, and I read it more than once, which is, I would wager to say a lot of my colleagues did not read it, but they voted for it. Some voted for it, some voted against it. There was a lot of misinformation. The original bill was bad. The original bill included language very similar to that Base Load Review Act. It was gray whether they could do that or not, like charge ahead, or they have to come behind and do it like normal. There was a lot more leeway given on right-of-ways because they're going to have to build a natural gas pipeline from Aiken to Colleton County for this to be successful. Here's the rub with that. You can't just build a natural gas pipeline. The federal government has to approve it. It's very backward from like all other infrastructure. Like if a county wants to build a road or the state wants to build a road, they build the road and then the businesses come to the road. Well, in this, you have to prove to the feds, there's a federal agency acronym like FERPA or something. You have to go and prove to them that there's enough clients or subscriptions to build that. And if there's not, they won't let you build it. So essentially the state is going to have to purchase about $20 million of subscriptions. In the original bill, that would have they would have been allowed to give away those subscriptions to big companies, like in the economic development deals, if they so chose. We successfully took that part out, thankfully. So essentially this bill is a story of how the committee process and amendments are supposed to work. Like, they're supposed to make less than good bills into better bills. Maybe not great bills, but the main crux of this bill was we need more power plants. And the best way to, the best option seems to be a natural gas plant. It burns clean, it's relatively affordable, and the land that they're going to build it on was a coal plant, so it's already kind of designated for fossil fuel use. The other positive sides of the bill is that it greatly restricted international companies from coming in and building solar farms on what should be farmland, what historically has been farmland, in order to get a bunch of federal tax credits. So it greatly restricted that, which is, I think, a good thing for food security for South Carolina. Without getting too deep in the weeds on how it does that, but just broadly does that. And it made the kind of green energy folks very upset. But overall, it mostly improved. Now, here's the downsides are still in there. It does add a bunch of language about economic development into the process of the Public Service Commission, which approves these rate hikes. Historically, they couldn't take that into account. They had to just rule based on need of primarily the customers, the residents. So this lets them take into consideration, well, if we approve some big factory coming in, it's going to employ 1,000 people, will that create more customers and create more demand in order to offset that? So that could be good, it could be bad. Really, the big stinker that's still in it is it shrinks the Public Service Commission from 7 people to 3. And that's problematic because that means only 2 people would be required to raise rates. Right now, you need 4 out of the 7. We don't anticipate that it will stay at 3. We think the Senate will move it, either keep it at 7 or maybe put it at 5. We had an amendment on the floor that lost by 2 votes. It was a bipartisan vote on both sides. Some Democrats voted yes, some voted no, some Republicans voted yes, some voted no on that amendment to strike that shrinking of the PSC.
Right.
That was probably the most dramatic moment of the day for that bill. So the message was definitely sent to the Senate that if they change it either back to 7 or to 5, then the appetite in the House will be to keep it that way, whatever they change it to. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the rundown of what was in the bill.
Okay. So, and the folks that don't understand checks and balances voted against the amendment.
Or they were told this is what you need to do.
Exactly, right.
On high.
Which would be the Speaker of the House.
Sometimes it's a lobbyist. Sometimes it's the majority leader. Sometimes it's the minority leader. I think honestly, in that case, it was a situation of confusion because that was not an expected. I don't think that was an expected move by the minority leader who put the amendment up. He made a good case. I mean, he's a trial attorney. He makes his living by making good cases in front of juries.
Right.
So,
right.
That helped him in that situation.
Absolutely. So we've got the history on it. We've got what's in the bill. Let's talk about what folks need to understand. What's good for them, what's good for the future, the sustainability of power in South Carolina, what's good for competition, what's good for the people that were raising red flags about the VC summer project.
Years ahead.
And folks did not pay attention. Folks did not, you know, give enough attention to it. And there we were, you know, mm-hmm. on the bill. There were ways I remember, you know, there were a couple wet blankets, you know, that got a slap on the wrist and, you know, blame was shifted over here. And
yeah. Some good things that happened from that was the whole PSC board, all 7 of them, were fired in the aftermath of that. So they elected a whole new board. But the wet blankets were the former chair of Santee Cooper and the former president of Santee Cooper were fired. They were retired early with a golden parachute where they get hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from the pension system because it's owned by the state. So it's a mess.
And we're left with rate hikes and mm-hmm. then, you know, all sorts of things that we see constantly that it just almost always feels like there is no end to it. There's no way to complain enough about it to yeah. make a difference, things like that. But there is a way to do it. And it comes now by paying attention to the red flags and holding representatives accountable for voting on the amendments and understanding, like you said, reading through this bill and understanding what's inside of it, and not just going along with something, you know, just because, you know, let's go back to the budget that 15 people voted against the budget, mm-hmm. you know, and now I received political mail about that. You know, of what was actually in the bill that people that called themselves conservative and they voted for it. And how could you vote for something and call yourself a conservative? And I can't help but agree with that. And so people need to be able to speak for their actions. Where do you want to go from here?
In the short term, the best analogy I have for this bill is that it is effectively, our state is bleeding energy. Like, we need more energy. It's our, in the same way that someone that's been stabbed is bleeding blood. So we need to stop the bleeding. This bill, I believe, will stop the bleeding or like lead to the Band-Aid. But the Band-Aid is made out of sandpaper. So it is a Band-Aid, but it is not a permanent solution. It's going to hurt. Like, it will probably wind up in increased rates down the line. Something that was put in the bill through that amendment process said that they can't raise rates until that facility is operational and useful and producing power. So it's a short-term fix. The long-term fix is competition, is creating a marketplace for energy like dozens of other states have and have had for decades. Texas kind of has their own thing. They're internal. They don't participate with buying and selling with other states, which is why they've had some problems. But in the Northeast, the Midwest, and out West, basically everywhere outside of the Southeast, they have these energy markets where, like if you live in Ohio, you have a list of places you can buy power from with their rates, reliability, and it's just like shopping for a car. That would create competition within the marketplace and drive prices down, drive innovation up. Here's the catch. The federal government has to approve all of those. They're called TKOs. I don't know why they're called TKOs. That's just what they're called. They have to approve these energy markets before they're allowed to exist. The current regime in Washington will not approve one that does not have exorbitantly high renewable energy quotas. So you have to have crazy high amounts of solar and windmills and all that stuff, which is not effective. And I mean, don't get me wrong, solar can be effective if you're in Arizona. But
well, it's not recyclable either. Let's remember that.
It's definitely not renewable in that sense.
Let's take into account how many greenhouse gases are made to produce these type of things. Yeah.
Yeah. And because they produce them in China, we don't see it, we don't care. So right now, the problem with creating the energy market in the Southeast and for South Carolina is the federal government. We need a change in policy, which requires a change in personnel in D.C. in order to move that ball forward and try to create that marketplace for energy. So you can have competition, and it's not weighted unevenly against consumers. Because at the end of the day, all of this is centrally planned economics, and we know that centrally planned economics is not sustainable in the long term.
No, absolutely not. So all this to say, you know, while the red flags are going off and we're trying to bring attention to this, and we need to know, it's the future of our state. you know, a life without power is pretty pathetic, and it's pretty crazy. It may sound nice to go off grid, and but you know, after a few days,
not Charleston in August. It's not.
Not Charleston in August. One of the most hot and humid places. So let's talk about learning from history, learning, you know, to not repeat that, but also know that what these certain traps and things look like, because we would be fools if we thought that Satan didn't have a place in politics and policy and law and things like that, in the unity of this nation and things like that. 2 Corinthians 2:11 comes to mind, so that we would not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his designs. Now, this was in reference to not holding unforgiveness, but that part of it is that Satan has designs. He's been around for a long, long time, and there's really nothing new coming from these schemes or these designs, but we do need to not be ignorant. He does not discriminate towards ignorance, and we need to understand the designs and understand that we can learn from history so we don't repeat certain mistakes and we don't fall into the same trap, that we don't stay forever a borrower to the lender, and then in this case, you know, a few conglomerates that have a monopoly on energy, that have used lobbyists to continue to suppress the people and the masses, because we're at capacity and we don't understand how to cut through the clutter of politics, which is what we're doing here. The second that you and I were talking about was, behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And Jordan, you're giving us that information ahead of time, saying, here, I'm just going to forewarn you, this is what we need to pay attention to, or else this is what things could look like. And you know, you're trying to help people understand that.
So one of the oldest contrivances or you know, tricks of Satan or deceptions of Satan is convincing people that the government, whether it's the king or the emperor or the president or the state, is actually the ultimate authority in this world, and we should look to them for power. And I mean that in kind of a pun, like historically, before electricity, you know, outside of people of faith, they look to kings for power and for safety and protection. And as long as the government is centrally controlling and essentially distributing power, literally to us in South Carolina and in many southern states, we are totally dependent on them. In a lot of places, it's virtually impossible to even go off grid and try to do your own thing, because of local rules and local regulations. You have to sell, like if you have solar panels, you have to sell that back to your energy provider at a fixed rate. You don't have a choice. You have to do it, as long as you're connected to the grid. So, I mean, that to me is one of the most obvious trap here. Is as old as Babylon and Sargon and you know all the pagan kings, Nebuchadnezzar, in the Old Testament. The people look for them in you know when Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when the king said, you know, violate the word of God, I'm the source of your power. And he was. He appointed them to positions of power within Babylon. They said, no, we're not going to do it. And it wasn't something they did. I mean, God used them to change the system in Babylon, eventually used them to help overthrow the corrupt administration of Babylon with a less bad king from Persia. So, faithfulness is rewarded. Sometimes we don't see it in this life, but we're promised repeatedly in the Bible. We see that over and over again. Most explicitly, I think in Hebrews, like Hebrews 11, talks about the faithfulness of these heroes of the faith. And that's a good place to look. I mean, that's a place where I look oftentimes for this isn't a biblical quote, but it's a good quote. If you can't do the smart thing, do the right thing. And just trust that you're not, you know, doing the right thing regardless of the consequences is what you're called to do, and you know, it's out of your hands.
Right. It's what we're showing our children, that we're doing the right thing, and you know, trying to look out for not only the future of our family, but for generations to come. And that's one thing that I know that you have, that vision, is to say, like, let's not just do what serves us right now and what's going to do this. And that's where sometimes, you know, others just, you know, sign off on, well, this feels really good right now.
Or this, you know, would be good for my reelection in 2 years. They're not, looking like, you look at the cathedrals and stuff in Europe, it took generations to build those, you know, amazing buildings. They had a generational mindset. They were thinking about their kids and grandkids, and that was what was driving their work.
Exactly. You know, I was on the way to take the kids to school recently, and traffic in every single direction. Then I'm trying to look at my phone to figure out which direction I should take. Well, to my surprise, my phone had no service. So in the same day, AT&T and Verizon had some tremendous issues. There was traffic in every direction. So my brain is, uh-oh. And so I turn around. Took me a while just to come a quarter of a mile back to my house. And trying to figure out what's happening. And so if you want to understand how vulnerable you are, our power grid, and, not having a certain amount of power, and not having competition, and not having it solely on one person or one provider, makes you extremely vulnerable. So without traffic lights, without, you know, all sorts of different things, and having plan A, B, and C, there is a time for people to also understand that we are vulnerable. And that's not the topic of what we're discussing today, but just talking about all this kind of reminded me that we're way a lot more vulnerable than we think we are. And especially when it comes to this, but we really need to be paying attention to where we're spending our tax dollars on this, and what we're signing ourselves up for, rate hikes and things like that.
And to kind of circle back from last week, we're talking about the DEI bill in higher ed. We were talking earlier, you brought up South Africa and how South Africa used to have a functioning power grid, and then they implemented all these equity policies. And to be fair, there was a lot of widespread injustice in South Africa for decades in apartheid.
Correct.
But the way to fix, and this is one reason we know that Ibram Kendi is wrong, the way to fix past injustice is not present injustice. Because if you look at it now, it was totally government run. They implemented all these equity policies and green policies, all the stuff that, frankly, the Biden administration is trying to put into this sector. And it's falling apart. I mean, even in their capitals, they have widespread rolling blackouts constantly.
For hours a day. I have friends that send me, videos of these blackouts that they experience hours a day. People trying to figure out how to get power because they want and need power, and they're getting electrocuted to death by trying to figure out their own way to get power. It is a terrible, terrible power grid system, and it's, it makes you think, hey, we're from the government, and we're here to help, or some of the scariest words. What was the quote?
So Reagan said that the scariest six words in the English language is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yeah. Guys, if you look around the world and you look at
nine,
what can go wrong? Do what?
It's nine words, not six.
Nine words, right. When you look around the world and you see how things can crumble and how bad things can go, find somebody and talk to them about what's going on. Go look at YouTube and look at what's going on, and look what could become a quick reality here. It's not fear mongering, but it's just making yourself understand what truly is possible, and what other people are learning to have to tolerate.
And I would argue that not to be too facetious with this, not just too sarcastic, but that is loving your neighbor. We heard that a lot for the last few years, is like, mm-hmm. what is loving your neighbor look like in society, but getting your family prepared for those kind of scenarios, not doomsday, but like having an adequate food supply for a couple weeks for your family and some extra for your neighbors. I mean, that's Absolutely. Loving your neighbor. So you're not dependent on them. So if you're able to do that, then do that.
Absolutely.
And that's, especially in the part of the world that we live in, we have a lot of transplants that are, you know, from somewhere else. Nothing, not that that's wrong. That's great. I'm glad a lot of them are moving here. Not all of them, most of them. But they just don't have a lot of roots. So that's a huge opportunity that we have as believers to reach out to them and love them.
Right. You know, we have that term Southern hospitality, but that's really rooted in potlucks and really just loving your neighbor as yourself. You know, looking at this bill, and Jordan, what you're usually telling us and telling us to look out for is don't be fooled by certain things. You know, it was only supposed to be a shutdown for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, for it's only 6 feet apart. You know, you just it's only for a little while, and it's you know, certain things. But sometimes these are short little power grabs that it can eventually domino effect and build on to one another.
Maybe worse than that is when it's not a domino, or when it's not necessarily a power grab, it's because the people in charge have no idea what they're doing. It's just incompetence, and you're putting your faith in them. Either one's a bad day.
Right.
2 weeks.
Yep. Yes. So thank you guys for tuning in. Hold your representatives accountable. We've talked about a couple things over the past week. We've talked about the DEI bill. We've talked about the school choice. We've talked about a lot of different things. And Jordan, I think we're going to have a segment coming up where you're going to kind of give us a rundown of where those all stand, what all that looks like, so that we can kind of close the loop on some of those things that we've discussed. But thank you for tuning in. Continue to tune in in the next coming weeks. We're going to have some guests on here. Jordan and I do also want to educate you on some other political races that are happening here in 2024. It's not just a presidential race this year. There's some other seats in the House and in the Senate up for grabs, and we want to educate you on who's who, and really, you know, expose the ones that their voting record it's not apparent how conservative they are, or the fact that they have cracked open a Bible or claim to be something, but those things do not line up. So we want to pass that information along to you. We do have an opinion when it comes to those things, so stay tuned for those things. And if you're listening, we really appreciate it. We continue almost every week to grow our weekly listeners, and we want to hear from you. We want to celebrate you. We want to hear from you. We want to promote your business. So reach out, the currentsituationpodcast.com. Send us an email. Let us know you're listening. Let us know how we can support you. And we're all here to support one another, to love our neighbors, and to do the right thing. So thank you for tuning in to Current Situation Podcast, and we will see you next week.